Live sport. This is The Grill, exclusively on Dubai Eye 103.8, where we, you, and the world of sport gets to have a say.
Buongiorno, welcome back to the third hour of the show, into the final hour of The Grill this afternoon. Myself, Chris McCarty, alongside Mark Archer, Carl Van Roosevelt. Centre court is packed. We are moments away from the women's final over there at Wimbledon. Venus Williams taking on the Spaniard Garbiñe Muguruza. And we've also, well, we've got a result from qualifying. We'll bring you that in just a moment. We're also going to be live to Wolfie Hoffman to talk all things Tour de France in about 15 minutes' time. It is stage 14 today of the 2017 edition. And the big news, Chris Froome, the defending champion, no longer in possession of the yellow jersey. We'll keep you up to date with all the live sport as well over proceedings over at Trent Bridge, England taking on South Africa. There's the golf from the Scottish Open. There's the wonderfully named John Deere Classic over in the US as well. And there's all the AFL to keep you up to date with as well. You are listening to The Grill. We are live down here for the next 53 minutes or so.
You're listening to The Grill, only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Let us start, if we can, ladies and gentlemen, with the latest from the F1. When I say latest, we have qualifying results. It will come as no surprise to the man who is on pole.
Absolutely. It's his 67th pole. And what I can tell you, it's that man, Lewis Hamilton. He's done it in front of his home crowd. Hamilton has qualified in first position for the British Grand Prix, and of course the siding will be the two Ferraris of Sebastian Vettel and Kimi Räikkönen.
It certainly will. We're just watching images on the big screens down here at Barasti. Jenson Button looking happy with himself. Of course he is now in, it's not retirement, is he? He's taking a sabbatical.
No, he's retired.
He is retired.
He came out of retirement to race in Monaco because Fernando Alonso went and raced in Indy for 500.
But I thought it was just a year out. He's definitely retired.
No, he's retired.
Okay. We can safely say that. A big hug.
Until he comes back and races again.
Exactly. We're seeing pictures now. David Coulthard there speaking
He looks like a younger version of David Coulthard, doesn't he, Jenson Button?
Yeah, he does. Doesn't he? That square jaw of David Coulthard. My goodness, he's aged well, hasn't he? As David Coulthard, what a driver he was. A fine Scot. Strapping loon is what we'd say up in Scotland.
Well, if you've been spending most of your days on the Monaco beaches, you'd also age well, Chris McCarty.
Ah, so true. Instead, we've got the Dubai beaches, Carl. We look not bad. Not as good as David Coulthard, but don't look too bad. What are you, 45 now, Carl?
No. I was saying, Mark Archer went to his first British Open in 1998 at the age of 40, so it's a celebration this afternoon.
Oh, goodness, we're having a laugh down here, so we are. Hopefully you are enjoying the show this afternoon. So Lewis Hamilton is on pole. He will be flanked by the Ferraris. Kimi Räikkönen second, that's a bit of a shock. Sebastian Vettel third, Valtteri Bottas fourth, but he has a five-grid penalty.
That's absolutely correct. Of course, him and Daniel Ricciardo have to deal with that five-grid penalty. So, yeah, it's really not the best start for Bottas, but obviously he'll be looking to make up the rounds. But I think, as we said earlier on, it's going to be an absolute dogfight between Hamilton and Vettel come Sunday.
I've just looked up at the other screen to my left down here at Barasti, and I've seen that Venus Williams, first point of the final. What's she gone and done? Just an ace, straight down the tee. So Venus Williams fancy in this one, and we talked about it a little earlier, didn't we, with Ream. It's the same with Roger. We talked about it with Roger. If he serves well tomorrow, you give him every chance. If Venus serves well, because we know she has one of the best serves on the ladies' tour, if she serves well this afternoon, she wins. Simple as that.
Yeah, it just applies a lot of pressure. And Garbiñe Muguruza, who's relatively new to the major Grand Slam scene, Venus Williams has been there, done that. And she'll know that if she can serve well, it's a get-out-of-jail-free card. It means that she can hold serve and put pressure on the opponent's serve, which is so important on grass court that she's got off to a good start here. So the first game of the 2017 ladies final at Wimbledon is underway. It's Venus Williams serving. She currently, it's all tied up at 15 points each.
Yeah, we'll keep you up to date when there is some big breaking news from that. I'm sure we should be with you for the conclusion of at least the first set before 6 o'clock. I was just remarking there as well, the court's not in great nick at the back of the court. I know it's wear and tear throughout 2 weeks, but the side that's closest to the camera, the TV, the television camera, it looks really worn. That will be a test for Cilic and Federer tomorrow.
And you think it is a big area there inside the court that is worn. And you think if the players are smart, they'll try and hit that. That's still plenty of room to hit for these players who are pretty pinpoint with their shots. If they can find that surface there, which is discoloured away from the normal green grass, it's very brown. It'll be very patchy. It'll be very, it'll break up a lot, so it'll be very inconsistent and bounce. So if you can continually hit the spot on the grass here, Chris, the ball will skid or the ball will pop through the surface and slow down a bit, which will be very difficult for the opponent to time their shots against that. So it could come into factor. We always see at Wimbledon, the court now deteriorates on centre court for finals weekend. It'll be interesting to see how it holds up over today and tomorrow. Of course, Roger Federer taking place with Marin Cilic tomorrow.
You are both very fortunate individuals. You work respectively for sporting entities. You've travelled the world. I know, Arch, you've been to every sporting event since 1942, for goodness sake. Wimbledon, have you done it?
I used to go to Wimbledon three times. We used to have dementia tickets, my old job when I was in the UK. So I'd always go on first Tuesday and bring a couple of corporate friends. Saturday I'd go for personal reasons and I'd try and get tickets. It's a very tough ticket to get, particularly around finals weekends.
How is it? Is it as good as it
It's
looks?
Just one of those very iconic, distinctive events. You have the strawberries and cream. It is cool. What I like about Wimbledon is not so much actually on centre court and court one. There's so many outside courts that you can get up close and personal. You can be within touching distance of the players playing on the many, many outside courts. And you can see, depending if they're playing all the different formats, particularly doubles or the mixed doubles formats, you can get really close to these players. It's amazing. You could almost grab a racket and just walk on the court and have a hit. It's that close to the action there. And it's a great location. Wimbledon's always fun. I always used to head up to the village not far away from Wimbledon and have a good time afterwards. It's very festive around SW sort of 19, SW 20 around there. And it's a fun event, and I really enjoy it. It's right up there for me, the best tennis event. It's like going to the Masters. Mm. It's such an iconic event within the calendar. A lot of fun at Wimbledon.
You ever had the pleasure, Carl?
Unfortunately not. I'm still looking to make friends in the right places to get me a ticket, Chris. I've been trying very hard. It's not for a lack of trying, but it's definitely on the bucket list to do, and I think ultimately one of the greatest sporting events definitely to go to.
And definitely one of the best sporting amphitheatres as well. Wimbledon final. There is something very special about the lawns and the green grass of the All England Club. It really is, and I think it's so unique as well because there's only, 3 weeks of the year where the grass court season comes into play. If you think clay, they play on it for months. They play on hard court, bookends the year. The grass, we only see it for three weeks.
Well, of course, there used to be two grass Grand Slams because Australia used to be played on grass up until quite a few decades ago now, but they used to play the Australian Open and Wimbledon on grass. US Open was always the hard court event in France. Roland Garros, known for the clay, but with Australia changing, grass court season is short now. It's probably almost a month, and that's it for the season. Given the difficulties in growing grass, I guess in many climates, it's a tough and to maintain the courts and to the standard that they have to for an event like this, it's just fantastic. But it's wonderful. Wimbledon, it's got so many idiosyncrasies. When when it rains, it invariably gets rain. The covers come across the court. We've now seen the introduction of the roof on centre court in recent years, so finals can take place. And just being involved in Wimbledon, being on, say, the hill, Henman Hill, as it's dubbed, is a lot of
Murray
fun as well.
Murray
Mound now, so it's or what would it be called when Johanna Konta dominates? What would it be called?
Oh, good question. What would it be called then? The Konta Knoll is what it will be. Knoll is spelt with a K, of course, K-N-O-L-L, is it not? So, yeah, the Konta Knoll. It's not bad, is it?
You're
surprised at that. Keep your thoughts coming in. An awful lot of you on the text lines. We'll get to a few of those texts before 6 o'clock. I mentioned it already before. This is the venue for the quiz. And you weren't here for your boss, i.e. the wife, didn't allow you to come down here on Wednesday night, Arch, which was disappointing. Carl, you have promised me you're away for business this week. You will be down here on Wednesday?
Yeah, absolutely, Chris. I'll become supporting you and just suss out the questions to see if it's really worth my resignation for the last week.
I'll give you another question. I think you maybe I said it on Thursday. Married in quorum. Married in quorum. What is their relationship, or why are they related? Who are they related to? What sporting great are married in quorum related to?
That's a good question.
I'll put that one out there on 4001. Married in quorum, they're related to a sporting great. Which sporting great is it? Let me give you a clue before we head for another quick commercial break. The clue, the answer, is in the question. Married in quorum. Get your answers in, 4001. I'm sure someone out there will get it. That was one of the quiz questions on Wednesday night. We are live down here at Barasti. We're keeping an eye, one eye on the tennis. We've got one eye as well on the F1, one eye on the cricket. But very quickly, before we go to another quick break, put us in the picture of the cricket. England wickets are falling, or are they starting to
make inroads? Only the falling of the wicket was Gary Balance in the second over after lunch, bowled by Vernon Philander for 27. Bit of a partnership forming now. Joe Root is on 59, not out. Johnny Bairstow has joined him. He is 11, not out. So a partnership of 23. England 109 for 3. That's in reply to South Africa's first innings of 335.
We'll keep you up to date with that. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Wolfie Hoffman. We're talking all things Tour de France next.
It's a homecoming. The Grill is back at Barasti. The best bar to watch sport live every Saturday afternoon from Barasti.
Yeah, there's some famous faces lining the courtside over there at centre court. You spotted a few, Carl?
Yeah, for one, Conchita Martinez, of course, the former Spanish player. Martina Navratilova, ultimately one of the greats of grass tennis. And I think nine-time Wimbledon champion, if I'm missing
the correct. Yeah, I think
you're right. So David Beckham has been there the whole week. I've WhatsApped him for some tickets. He's still yet to reply. So, David, you've got one more day left. But, it seems like Nico Rosberg, of course, he remembered to wear his socks this time, so he was allowed into the Royal Box. He was sitting there next to Jude Law yesterday. So, yeah, all the big names do come out at Wimbledon. And funny that we have not seen Prince William, that he normally ends
I'm
up going.
Sure, I'm sure he'll be there tomorrow.
I'm sure he will.
He'll be watching his good friend Roger Federer, because I think they are friends, aren't they? Roger Federer popped up at Pippa Middleton's wedding a couple of weeks back. Roger Federer, that's the way he rolls. He's royalty. He's sporting royalty, and he's got royal friends.
I'm sure they must have paid him an appearance fee. I mean, the man Pippa Middleton married isn't too poor himself, so I'm sure Roger must have got an appearance fee there.
Indeed, I'm sure he did. Let us talk, if we can. Tour de France ongoing. It's got 8 days left. It all comes to a climax a week tomorrow in the French capital of Paris. It very much is a ceremonial stage, that one. But it's hotting up nicely. We saw a fantastic race yesterday. I'm sure one is shaping up this afternoon as well. And one man who has, well, he's been our man about town. He's our man for the cycling. He's our man for the Tour de France. It is Wolfie Hoffman from Wolfie's Bike Shop. He now joins us live on the line. A very good afternoon to you, Wolfie.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you, my friend. Great to have you on the show, Wolfie. Out for your little cycle this morning before sitting down in front of the television screen this afternoon?
No, I needed a rest day. I was cycling out yesterday, but then Saturday morning, we have a busy day in the shop, so I take a bit of a rest and prepare myself to watch the stage in television.
A rest day for yourself today, Wolfie. Good to see you. Need rest days. Rest is important, my friend. Let us talk, though, about the big stories over the course of the past couple of days. I guess the biggest takeaway is that Chris Froome, he's not getting that yellow jersey back without a fight, is he?
Yes, absolutely. And it's very exciting. We have really yesterday as well, interesting day, 100-kilometer stage only. And it made it quite interesting that we saw Quintana and Contador coming back into contention. They regained a few seconds, a valuable seconds, to be back into the game. Today as well, the riders have about 95 kilometers to go. It's an intermediate stage. I think it will be difficult enough that the sprinters might struggle at the end. I hope Marcel is strong enough and his team will bring him to a good position. But today is not maybe the perfect day for him. If you look at the finish, it looks a bit lumpy, and there is some climbs in there, which is maybe a little bit too much for a big guy like Marcel. Yeah, interesting to see today. We have a group at the moment away, five riders. One of them is Thomas Vogler. And for those who may be watching the Tour de France for the last couple of years, he was one of the riders holding on in 2004 already. In 2011, he was holding on to the yellow jersey. He won it in a breakaway and then held on for almost 20 days altogether. It's his 15th Tour de France, and it's always very exciting to see him. And it was amazing to see him these years back when he was holding on to this yellow jersey, how he was fighting and how that yellow jersey gives you an extremely power. So it was quite nice to see him today again in his 15th Tour de France, maybe trying to win a stage.
Wolfie, you just described that this stage, 181 kilometres, is probably not going to be a stage for the sprinters. I've just seen, though, and I hope you can explain it to us and the listeners, there was a mini sprint element of this, and Marcel Kittel did dominate it. He did get some 10 points for, I think, the green jersey or the sprinter's jersey. He got up to a speed of over 63 kilometres just for that mini sprint. Can you explain how the points system works for the sprinters within the overall race, and how that evens out at the end?
Yes, absolutely. You see, the points you collect over all these days, you collect points either in the end sprint or an intermediate sprint to make it a little bit more exciting. The same is for the polka dot jersey. So we have, it's quite interesting to see actually the Tour de France, and sometimes it's obviously a little bit difficult to understand. But there's different races going on a mountain stage. For some of the riders, it might be only the survival. For some of them, they only pick really one day and one stage to try to win that stage, and you see them riding away. They make sure they have enough time gap to not be a challenge for the yellow jersey. Then we see other riders competing for the green jersey, which is the most consistent sprinter. It could be that you collect over all these days, with every time you get maybe second or third, you collect the most points and you will be rewarded the most consistent sprinter in Paris, and you're allowed to wear that green jersey without even winning a stage. So at the moment, Marcel is in a good position. He won so many stages already, 5 stages, and I think he's holding on to the jersey. At the beginning of the tour, we would have thought that Peter Sagan is the person who is unfortunately taken out of the tour, that he would be the clear winner for the green jersey because he's such a consistent sprinter, even if it's a difficult sprint finish. But as I said, there's yet different races going on in the tour for different reasons. People ride in the front, so that makes it so exciting.
Let's concentrate, if we can, Wolfie, on the yellow jersey for a second, because Chris Froome, the defending champion, not in yellow. Fabio Aru has that. Just how troublesome is this for Chris Froome? How worried will he be? I know there's still a long way to go, Wolfie, but just tell us, there's still plenty of time, still enough stages for him to get that 6 seconds back.
Absolutely. I think for the Team Sky, maybe it's almost a bit of a rest. I think Chris wanted to hold on to it. And I think the yellow jersey comes with so much pride that you're not going to give it up as easy. And Chris likes to wear the jersey. He worked for 50 days in the Tour de France. He's only 6 seconds behind. And I think all the other riders know that there is a time trial coming at the end of the tour, and it is about 22 kilometers. And I expect that Chris Froome, if he's in halfway decent shape, he can take 10 to 15 even more seconds off the rider. So I think Fabio Aru and Romain Bardet have two more chances in the mountains, one top mountain finish on Thursday and another tough stage on Wednesday for the climber. So I think they have to try to get some time in. And even today, the race is not over. We have many people, 5 riders within a minute, that's not enough. We saw, I think it was quite an amazing stage when within 400 meters, Chris Froome lost about 20 seconds. And that is, I've never seen that somebody on the climb can lose so much time in such a short period and that class of rider. So it's still an open race, and it's still a couple of days to go. Monday is a rest day for the riders. I think they really appreciate this. But then we go to the last week, and it's tough for them.
It certainly is tough. I don't envy those boys on that saddles over there in France. Before we let you go, Wolfie, you said at the start of this 2017 Tour de France, you fancied Chris Froome. From what you've seen in the last couple of days, he's still the man for you. You still think he will be celebrating success come Sunday afternoon?
Yes, I think Team Sky is a very strong team. Even so, I think most of the favourites have lost one of their main helpers. We lost yesterday Aru Rostfuglsang, who was an important man in his team to help him in the mountain stages. But Chris has a super strong team. You could see how strong they're riding. There's a time trial coming up, and I think the others will put some pressure on him. But I think it's one of the most exciting tours I've seen in the past years. And they have done 2,300 kilometers now, and it's 3,500 kilometers in total. So I think we're going to see some more exciting days. So stay tuned.
Yeah, cannot wait. Cannot wait at all. We will be looking forward to that over the course of the next week. Wolfie, and we'll also be catching up with you across the next week as well. You'll keep us up to date with all that is going on over there at the Tour de France. For now, though, Wolfie Hoffmann, thank you, my friend.
Have a good evening. Thank you for having me on the show.
Top man, that is Wolfie Hoffmann. Do check out his shop down there on Sheikh Zayed Road, Wolfie's Bike Shop. Every need that you have around a bike is covered and then some. It's a science.
Apparently he set you up, Chris.
He did, yeah. He went in.
He failed to tell you how to change the gears, though, on your
bike.
Didn't
do that, unfortunately. So
that's the one thing Chris had to do by himself, and he couldn't do it. I think that's where the problem came.
One job, didn't he?
One job.
Change the gears.
Job. But as you say, that shop is fully kitted, and of course the service is fantastic. Wolfie normally on the floor himself.
He is.
Giving you a hand there and helping you out with all your cycling
they
needs.
They weigh you, they measure your height.
Did you actually go get fitted to your bike?
Yeah,
have you? The question I'm asking, have you used it since your triathlon? Your
yes,
debut in the triathlon?
Yeah, I've zipped around the marina. Unfortunately, I'm moving house, so I'm now in the green, so you're going to see me zipping around in a little blue mountain bike. I say mountain bike, it's a road bike, for goodness sake.
And will you be joining Wolfie on one of his 5 a.m. runs on a Friday morning?
No, not yet. I'm not that way inclined yet. He does about 120 kilometers a day. He's a monster.
Chris has not even got back home at that time.
Yeah, that's the problem as well. Carl Van Roosevelt, he's out far too early as Wolfie, but yeah, I've got to complete 25k before I start mixing it with the big boys. 120k most Friday and Saturday mornings, Wolfie and his cyclists. But it is a huge, it's a burgeoning community out here. There's an awful lot of people who love their cycling, and an awful lot of people will be tuning in for the Tour de France across the day. I'm going to looking at you here, Carl, because the women's final is now being transported onto the big screen beside our little vantage point down here at Baraste. 20 minutes in.
Yeah. And
what have you made of it?
It's currently 3-all, very, very tight at the moment. Both ladies have had opportunities on each other's serves, but Chris, as you say, very, very tight at the moment. The game going on serve at this moment in time, and currently 3-all in the ladies' final at SW19.
From what you've seen, I know it is tight, but anyone giving you hope? Is one of the ladies giving you, you think that maybe, just maybe, they're the favourite?
Yeah,
from the early exchanges?
From the early exchanges, it definitely seems that, as I say, that she's made a double fault. Yeah. Venus has come out the more confident one out of the two. She seems to be taking a chance a little bit better. Muguruza seems a little bit more on the nervy side, but I guess a time will tell, Chris.
Yeah, indeed. Venus Williams, I would agree with that assertion, because she is much the aggressor of the two. We're seeing her now dictating the play from the back of the court. She's got Garbi Muguruza moving left and right, and then she finishes with aplomb, a beautiful forehand down the line there that takes it to 15-all. Three apiece in this opening set. We will keep you bang up to date with that. When we come back, we'll do just that. We'll go to cricket as well. We've got the golf to keep you up to date with, all the football news as well. And we talked a little bit about transfers a little earlier. When we come back, we've got the inside track on a story, a football transfer story that could have wide-reaching implications right here in the UAE. Much, much more to come between now and 6 o'clock.
Unbelievable goal!
It's a homecoming. The Grill is back at Baraste, the best bar to watch sport live every Saturday afternoon from Baraste.
Nice to have a few regular listeners pop over and say hello to us. Robert and James are in the building, big Everton fan and a big Queen's Park Rangers fan as well, the both of those, asking what is going on with Everton. Everton have had a busy old summer thus far. Wayne Rooney back. Interested to see he scored as well on his debut the other day.
From
wonderful
distance,
finish.
Apparently, yeah. I haven't seen the goal yet, but will it be that fairy tale ending for Rooney back at Everton? We've debated that throughout the week, but I think it's a good move for Rooney to go back to Everton. There wasn't a lot of clubs that could actually afford him. He wasn't going to go to one of the big four clubs in the Premier League. It didn't look like he wanted to take on the cultural change that would have been offered to him in China, maybe the US, but he's gone to his boyhood club. He's still a fan of Everton, and let's hope he has a good season, reinvents himself to a touch, and can find some playing time under Ronald Koeman.
Chris, what I wanted to touch on, the rumours had it that Rooney wasn't about £300,000 a week at United.
Insane.
Everton surely can't afford those wages.
I think he's taken a massive pay cut in order to seal that move back to Everton. There is some suggestion as well that Manchester United still paying some of his wages as well, has been mooted, or that he was given a payoff by Manchester United in order to facilitate that move to Everton. But good move for Wayne Rooney. It is worth reminding ourselves he is still only 31. Regular football, who knows, he may well be back in that England squad for the World Cup next summer. We wish Wayne Rooney well in his new endeavours back at the club, of course, that he supported as a boy. I said to you before the break that there is a big, well, there's a big transfer story brewing right here in the UAE concerning Al Ain and UAE star Omar Abdulrahman. Regular listeners will know, huge fan of Omar Abdulrahman. He really is the talisman for both Al Ain and the UAE. This past week, reports that Nice, the French club Nice, have had a loan offer rejected for Omar Abdulrahman. Why is this big story? Well, the UAE have never had a player playing their trade in one of the top five European leagues. John McCauley from The National has been across this story, and I caught up with him to get the very latest on Omar Abdulrahman and whether a move to Nice is really, really in the pipeline. Well, it is silly season, of course. The transfer rumour mill has been cranked up a notch or two over the past couple of days. Of course, one or two deals being done as well, the biggest of which over the past 24, 48 hours has undoubtedly been James Rodriguez joining Bayern Munich in a loan deal, a two-year loan deal. We believe that fee to be around £9 million with the option of a permanent deal if James is indeed successful at the Allianz Arena. Locally, though, Well, there's only one story that is dominating conversations across the UAE today, because it's a story that broke with the National, good friend John McCauley, who is the football correspondent for the National newspaper down there in Abu Dhabi. And it...
The interest from Nice is certainly legit. It's genuine interest. I know that for a fact. Whether or not Alien have rejected out of hand, the loan offer is another matter, Chris, to be honest. Basically, Nice have contacted Alien. As you said, there was a letter there that a lot of people weren't too sure if it was authentic or not. I've been told that it certainly is. They contacted Alien on the 27th of June, officially contacted on the 27th of June, asking could they loan Omar Abdulrahman with the view to a permanent deal. Now, as the letter states, and this is why people maybe thought that it just seems strange wording for a kind of established European club to put this into their approach or their offer, but it had said that they could offer Omar UEFA Champions League football and the opportunity to play in that. Nice, by the way, have not yet qualified for the tournament proper. They've got a couple of playoffs to do in the next few weeks, but they're expected to go through there and go into the main tournament, into the group stages. But that seems to be their kind of main carrot, the selling point. And I've been told by various people, there's rumours doing the rounds that Alien definitely turned that down out of hand and won't deal with them. But I really do have a feeling that this will rumble on.
Rumble on then, John, into a permanent deal. I know some figures have been quoted of about £15 million is a figure that Alien reportedly have put onto the head of Omar Abdulrahman. That is about 63 million dirhams. Could we see, are we literally looking at potentially Omar Abdulrahman moving on from the UAE and going and becoming the first Emirati to play in European football?
Well, Chris, as you well know, kind of scepticism would be my default setting whenever it comes to issues of this kind in UAE football. But what I would say, look, we had said in the story that Alien valued Omar at 15 million euros earlier on this year. You remember he was voted Asian Player of the Year in December. You know, a couple of weeks before that, he'd led Alien, almost single-handedly led Alien to the final of the Asian Champions League, where they were defeated. So that was his value then. It's my understanding that he would be sold, if he was going to be sold, and believe me, it's still a big if at this stage, if he was going to be sold, it would be closer to 10 million. But this is definitely, look, as you said, Omar's been linked with European clubs in the past. He had told us that he had turned down Benfica in, I think, 2012, 2013. There's been links to Hamburg, Valencia, even Arsenal had registered an interest before. So, you know, we've been here before. The only caveat to that is that I think that this is the most genuine attempt to get Omar away from Alien, or it's something that, as I said, it's got legs. There's still developments to come. There's still a lot of negotiations to take place, from my understanding, obviously because of the money involved, etc. But I really do think that we'll be hearing a little bit more of this. I think it's maybe the closest chance we've had to Omar potentially moving. I know that doesn't seem like it's that big a shout, but at this moment in time, that's where I think we stand.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on this, John. It does seem the stars are more aligned this time round. You look at it, he's a little bit older as Omar Abdulrahman at 25. He is the reigning Asian Player of the Year. He's already helped, as we know, the UAE to Gulf Cup success. And looking a little bit further afield, with an Asian Cup on the horizon right here in the UAE in 2 years' time, we both know, John, we've been here a long enough time to know now that these transfers, they're politicised as well, aren't they? And if he gets a club that showcases him, as Nice potentially could, on that UEFA Champions League front, then it does give it, I guess, some credence.
Yes. I think that's the central kind of facet to this deal, or the overriding factor, is that this is a real opportunity to showcase the UAE's top talent on, you know, the biggest club stage, if indeed transfer goes through, and if indeed Nice go through in the Champions League into the group stages. You know, that's the real carrot, as I said. It's just whether or not all the pieces fall into place. You've got to remember, Omar's the highest earning Emirati footballer playing here at the moment, and Nice, from my understanding, would not match that. I wouldn't expect them to. So it comes down to a couple of factors, as I said. One of them, really, that a primary factor would be Omar's ambition, really. And, you know, would he think to himself, I prefer to take less money to go and really test myself outside the country. We know how good his lifestyle is here, how settled he is, how much, don't get me wrong, that he absolutely loves Al Ain. He's got a real affection for them. So there's a lot of things that need to fall into place, as I said.
There certainly is an awful lot to fall into place before we see Omar Abdelrahman, who knows, over in Nice in the south of France. Good club for him. You were saying off-air there, Arch, you just do not think it will happen.
I think at age 26, if he 25. Was gonna, 25, if he was going to go to Europe, he probably would have done it by now. We know he's a big fish in a pretty small pond here in the UAE. I don't know if it's a big difference from living in LA to going to any league in Europe. So football-wise, yeah, I think he's got the ability to fit in at the right club, playing the right style.
Yeah.
Premier League, I have my doubts whether he'd make it just because of the physical nature of that. He's only a little guy. He's a very skillful guy, but does he have the durability to last a full Premier season campaign? Probably only playing for a mid-tier Premier League club at best. He's going to get any game time. And I just don't know. He earns a lot of money. He's a comfortable living here. If he doesn't go now, though, you can't see him going at ages 27, 28.
Completely so agree.
It will be interesting to see if he does go. Of course, there's factors in this. I mean, Alain is still in the quarterfinal stage of the Asian Champions League. Should they go on and win that, there might be a chance to play at the Club World Cup final at the end of the year. Who knows? But the jury is cast whether he will actually leave Alain and end up in Nice or in Europe.
He's a big fish for Nike as well, isn't he, Carl, as Omar Abdelrahman? But he would, I've seen him in action, I know you have as well. He, no doubt about it, technically, he is different class. He's a wonderful, wonderful player. It is just finding that right environment for him.
Yeah, he's absolutely fantastic asset for the brand. And I think it's time that he takes a step up, because I think, you know, he's achieved everything that he has achieved in this league. And I'm not taking anything away from this league. It's a great, great league with great, great players. But I'd like to see a talent like himself test himself against the best. You know, I'd like to see Abdelrahman playing in the Champions League. Nice can give him that opportunity. And as you said, I think probably to Archer's point, maybe a bit easier for him to adjust to European football, starting with the French league and then looking elsewhere. But I think, you know, if there is this opportunity, if he can still earn the same money that he's currently earning over here, I think it's a fantastic move for him. And I think him as a player should really look at taking this opportunity.
Yeah, I completely agree on that front as well. Just one other local-ish story to bring you up to date with. I've just been reminded by our good friend Chris Brown, of course, Monday Night Football. Chris Brown, he is one of our Monday Night Football pundits. He's been in touch to say, remember Teddy Sheringham, because the big announcement earlier today, Teddy Sheringham has now taken over at the Indian Super League side, Atletico de Calcutta. I know Brownie played a part in negotiations, so Sheringham starting up again after the disappointments, you could say, of his spell in charge of Stevenage Borough over there in the lower leagues of England. So he's taking over the reigning ISL champions. They've won two of the three titles on offer since this ISL came into existence. And what about this for a few of the names managing over there in India? Rennie Mullenstein, the former first team coach at Manchester United, worked under Sir Alex Ferguson, of course. He's taken over Kerala Blasters. You've got Steve Coppell, he is there as well. He's in charge of Jamshedpur. That was after leading Kerala to the ISL final last year. You've got John Gregory now as well, the former Aston Villa boss. He is in charge of a club over there as well. All gets underway on October the 1st. 10 teams. It's been expanded by two extra teams. So 10-team tournament. It is a league format, of course. And we wish Teddy and Atletico de Calcutta all the very best. Of course, Atletico Madrid have shares. They bought over Calcutta. They're involved somehow or another. But we wish Teddy well. And I'm sure we'll hopefully get him if Brownie works his magic. We will have him on the show this week to talk about that particular adventure that he's about to take on. We're engrossed, so we are, in the tennis. When we come back, we're into the final segment of this afternoon's Grill Show. Myself, Chris McCarty, Mark Archer, Carl Van Roosevelt. We'll get you up to date with the tennis. We'll get you up to date. There's wickets a-falling in the cricket over in Trent Bridge, and we'll also put you in the picture of the Tour de France as well. You are listening to The Grill live from Barnsley.
It's a homecoming. The Grill is back at Barasti. The best bar to watch sport live every Saturday afternoon from Barasti.
What a time to come back to us. What a rally we have just witnessed in the tennis. I can tell you, Garbini Muguruza, 15-40 on her serve. She is 4-5 down, trying to save herself in this opening set. There must have been 25 shots in that rally. Venus has blinked first. Still, though, set point to the veteran.
Absolutely, and I think, as you said, one of the longest rallies in the game. But it seems like Burgosa playing very safe. It's Venus that's really pushing her to the edge, Chris. She, you know, she's flirting with the tram lines. She's flirting with the baseline. And, yeah, very, very confident at the moment. She's still got the break point in the first set, and this will be absolutely huge if she wins it. But Muguruza back at deuce. So she has saved 2 set points there. Well done to the Spaniard.
Yeah, very, very well done. Nerves of steel that from Garbini Muguruza. Still 4-5 down juice. We'll keep you up to date with the latter part of this opening set. Let us talk, because I'm conscious we haven't done it. Let us talk AFL, if we can, very quickly, Arch, because season up and running. Season has been for a long time now, and it's fast approaching business end.
Yeah, round 17. I'll give you a quick rundown from some of the results yesterday and today. One result yesterday was Essendon were too strong for St Kilda. They won that match 118-57. Essendon go to 9th on the table. St Kilda stay in 7th. Earlier today at the MCG, the Geelong Cats have gone to 1st in the AFL table with a narrow victory against the Hawthorn Hawks. 13-10-88 against 12-13-85. We'll bring you the highlights in just a minute. At Adelaide Oval, Port Adelaide Power surged to 4th in the log with a 70-point victory against North Melbourne, 127-57. In the 2 late matches this afternoon, the Collingwood Magpies defeated Gold Coast Suns 103-88, and the Sydney Swans have beaten the GWS Giants 103-88. But a massive match earlier today at the MCG. It was the Geelong Cats that have gone to top of the table with a win against the Hawthorn Hawks. Let's just have a quick listen to the dying stages of this exciting contest between the Cats and the Hawks.
Two great champions going at the ball. Look at this, 2 minutes 45 to go.
He called it before the game too. He said he was going to get Dangerfield.
And desperate and final seconds tick away. 32 seconds left on the clock. It's Geelong by 10 points.
Huge stoppage here. Definitely need a goal. Hawthorn players need to get on the move.
As you can see, Tui goes to the goal square. Burgoyne concedes some ground. Hodge! Hodge for the hero! The miracle goal! No! Yes, he has! He's gone! 20 seconds to go in this game! And it's game on!
Well, they're going to charge through this centre bounce. 4 of them coming
in. It could be 18 seconds left in Hawthorn's season. Mitchell again goes forward. That's a mark! Gunston, 10 seconds. 8 seconds. Inside 50. Played on! Smith's kick is offline, is it?
It is.
Why did he play on? And for the second week in a row, Hawthorn have the chance to win the game in the last second and don't. Geelong win with Patrick Dangerfield kicking 5-6 with an injured foot. Luke Hodge in his 300th game once again gave Hawthorn the chance to win an amazing game of football. And again, these two wonderful clubs, Hawthorn and Geelong, put on a magnificent game of football at the MCG.
It certainly was a magnificent game. So how does that leave the standings then, Archie?
Yeah, it means that Geelong have gone into the lead of the competition along with Adelaide Crows. Back in third, the GWS Giants along with Port Adelaide. The final 4 positions in the top 8, Melbourne, Richmond Tigers, St Kilda and Sydney Swans are currently in 8th. So it's getting towards the business end of AFL. Round 17, let's just keep a track on that over the next couple of weeks, how the teams veer towards the playoffs.
That is the AFL. Get you bang up to date what is going on down under, of course. Let us, if we can, get some live sport before we clock off for the evening. The golf, let's start there. Scottish Open, Aberdeen Assets, Scottish Open. We are a week out from the Open down at Birkdale. You've got the latest, Arch.
Yeah, what I can tell you is Chris McCarty. It is Ian Poulter that is leading with 2 shots. He's 2 under for today. He's leading at 10 under par. He's followed there by Andrew Dott at 8 under par. Callum Shinkwin at 8 under par. Andy Sullivan, fantastic 67 today, at 7 under par. Also, Ricky Fowler slipping down the leaderboard. He's at 6 under par. Big news, of course, for this tournament is Rory McIlroy has missed the cut.
He certainly has. That is a big story, and there's an awful lot of fallout from that one ahead of the Open. So that's the latest from the Scottish Open. What about across the pond over at the John Deere Classic? It is up there as the best titled tournament around the world. What was the other one? The Waste Management Open as well, which is another nonsense one. But the John Deere Classic.
John Deere Classic, round 3 yet to get underway today. And the leaderboard is dominated by Americans. Patrick Rogers leads the way on 13 under par rounds of 65 and 64. He has a 2-shot lead over a man that's done well over in the Desert Swing before. Bryson DeChambeau is 11 under par. 1 shot further back to Charles Hull the 3rd and Zach Johnson on 10 under par. So you're bang up to date with the John Deere Classic, of course. All eyes on the golfing circuit head towards Royal Birkdale on Thursday when the Open Championship gets underway. I think it's the 146th Open Championship. Happy to be corrected if it's not, correct one.
Maybe make that a quiz question for next week, in actual fact, Archie. Kyle, what about Formula One? We've seen a result a little earlier from qualifying for the British Grand Prix, and it's the home favourite on pole.
Absolutely. He's 67th pole position, one behind Michael Schumacher, of course. It is Lewis Hamilton. He's followed on the grid there by the two Ferraris of Kimi Räikkönen and Sebastian Vettel. So it's all Lewis come tomorrow at the British Grand Prix.
Yeah, Kimi Räikkönen in second, Sebastian Vettel third, Valtteri Bottas qualified fourth, but he's got a five-grid penalty.
Of course he does.
And yeah, Fernando Alonso got 30? 30 place penalty for
Fernando Alonso will be starting from the streets of London tomorrow. He's going to be so far behind, and hopefully we'll make it to Silverstone on time. But yeah, absolute dreadful season for Fernando. One other update, Chris McCarthy, Super Rugby, of course, it's the Bulls taking on the Stormers as we speak. 22-21, the Stormers leading that one at halftime in Pretoria.
We'll give you an update of the cricket as well over at Trent Bridge. Day two of the second test, England superior to South Africa in the opening test. Is that the same case?
The test is evenly poised. Big, big wicket for South Africa recently. It was the English captain, Joe Root, scored 190 at Lord's. He's been finally dismissed. He scored 78 of only 76 deliveries. Caught behind by Quinton de Kock, bowled by Mornay Morkel. It means that Morkel's got two wickets today already. Philander with the other two. It means that Johnny Bairstow, 33 not out, has been joined by Ben Stokes, yet to score. England 155 for four. And it's a key phase of this game. Ben Stokes, Johnny Bairstow, and of course Moeen Ali to come is really the heart of the English middle order. Let's see if they can get a partnership. So England 155 for four. They trail South Africa's first inning score of 335 by 180 runs. Six wickets remaining in their first innings.
We're just watching the tennis, and my goodness, what a seismic few moments we have just witnessed. It was 15-40, two set points to Venus Williams. Garbini Muguruza saved each of those, and she's now, Carl Van Roosevelt, just done what?
She's just broken the serve of Venus Williams, and what I can tell you, she'll be serving for the set in the next game, Chris. What a tussle these two ladies are having. Every point is about 20 different shots that they're playing. Absolute tussle between these two. She's currently leading 6-5 in the first set, and of course her serve to come. She'll be serving for the set. Fantastic effort by the young Spaniard.
She is a counter puncher, no doubt about that, Garbini Muguruza. It is Venus dictating things from the back of the court. It is Garbini who is scampering to catch every ball, but thus far she is proving herself not to be breakable. A long way back, of course, and still a long way to go, but we keep an eye on this, and I'm sure we will once we clock off in the next couple of moments. Almost it for us this afternoon. I think one of the key takeaways from me is that you boys will not be paying your £86 or $70 for Conor McGregor against Floyd Mayweather on August 26th.
No, I think I'll wait till the highlights package comes out a day or two afterwards and catch it. It may only be a short bout. Depends on whether Money Mayweather wants to make it last. One round, three rounds, or six rounds. Let's wait and see. It's, a month away? What's the date?
August the 26th. Jürgen's been in touch on the text lines, and he makes the good point here that all of what Conor is on the mic, is all his histrionics on the mic over the past 4 days, that will be longer than this fight. Floyd Mayweather will dictate exactly what happens in this fight. There is no doubt in my mind Floyd Mayweather will win. It's just about how.
Absolutely, unquestionably the greatest defensive boxer that has ever boxed is Floyd Money Mayweather. And I think Conor will play right into his hands. The first three rounds, Conor will come out on fire. Mayweather will keep him away from him. And I reckon in about the sixth round, he'll put into the canvas.
Yeah, I'm with you on that front. That is it almost for us. Interestingly, transfer news. I saw today that Jose Mourinho refusing to rule out Zlatan Ibrahimovic coming back to Manchester United. Of course, he is currently out injured with that serious knee injury, so we await with interest on that one. The money started to be spent now. There's an awful lot of money. There's already been an awful lot of money spent. Arsenal winners today, by the way. Incidentally, they beat the Western Sydney Wanderers by 3-1, but there's going to be an awful lot more money spent between now and the start of the season. It's football gone mad.
Absolutely, Chris, and it's actually ridiculous if you see the amount of money that he's getting spent at the moment. Mourinho reckons he still needs two more signings for Man United. Of course, he will be under a lot of pressure, because if you look at the money he's spent, if he doesn't at least challenge for the title this year and confirm Champions League football, I think his job will be under severe pressure. And it will be interesting to see who Chelsea will come to the party with. Of course, they're looking to offload Matic and Diego Costa. So I think still a lot of business to be done before the start of the season.
Awful lot of money, as I say, still to be spent. Arsenal will be busy, Manchester City. Let us not forget Spurs. They've not signed one player yet. An awful lot to be done in England and across Europe as well. Real Madrid Well, they've let James Rodriguez go to Bayern Munich. Don't get that one, but that's more. We'll discuss all of that and much, much more on Monday Night Football on Monday evening. That is it for us. It is just ticking close to 6 p.m. Mark Archer, thank you very much, my friend. You're off to do what this evening? Have a steak?
Take it easy, yes. To enjoy my dinner and maybe catch the end of the Wimbledon ladies' final. It's 6-5 to Margaret, and it's going to be a tight contest. So I can see this going three sets. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. Well. And then I'll see you tomorrow night for the men's final, of course, Sports Tonight, Sunday night. Roger Federer, the 35-year-old, can he win his 8th Wimbledon title? I guess we'll be bringing it all live action tomorrow night.
Yeah, we will indeed. We're on air from 7 p.m. Thank you very much to you, Mark Archer. And Carl Van Roosevelt, thank you. Great to see you. You're back in one piece from your holiday. Or a week away on business is what it was. That's how you've sold it to us anyway. It definitely was business.
Absolutely business.
But you sold it to the wife as well.
Well, she's away too, so that hasn't really helped. But yeah, fantastic week of sport ahead, and really, really looking forward to the Wimbledon final tomorrow. Yeah,
come on, Roger.
Cannot wait for that. Roger Federer against Marin Cilic. You're also rotated in this week as well. You'll be on Sports Tonight. I think it is.
I'll see you on Thursday, Chris.
I'll see you on Thursday. Robbie Greenfield still off enjoying the golf of the UK. He's off on holiday until the end of the month. But that is it from all of us down here at The Grill. Thank you to the boys for keeping us on the airwaves this afternoon. Thanks as well to Elaine back in the studio. And I can tell you, it is set point Garbini Muguruza in this opening set. Hope you are watching the tennis. If you are planning to, I'm sure it will be a great final. It already is living up to its billing. From all of us down here at Barasti, have yourselves a lovely Saturday evening, and do make sure to tune in from 7 p.m. for Sports Tonight tomorrow night. Good night.
See you next Saturday for more sport, more fans, and more balls. With an eye on sport, this is Dubai Eye 103.8.